Free FM.
Ben Gillette.
Yeah, this is Ben Gillette on the big CBS radio, Freak FM. I'm sitting here with Michael Godot, and this is a very special show. This is a show I've been waiting to do since before I had a show, before there was time to have a show. I did Fear Factor years ago. Dylan and I did it, and the host is Joe Rogan, and we got along fabulously. I had such a crush on him. I just dug him. We're sitting around afterwards talking, and we're agreeing on everything. I mean, we're just going through the whole list, man. Atheist, this is BS, this is BS, boom, boom, boom. It's just this huge kind of bonding experience. Fast, funny, cool. Went to see him live. He's terrific. And then Joe says, kind of out of the blue, and of course you don't believe we landed on the moon. And I, of course, say, you mean you and me, Joe? Or do you mean humanity? And Joe says, oh, no, humanity. We didn't land. It's impossible. And then starts a relationship between me and Joe where we are getting along and loving each other. And then he sends me these videotapes that are done by mentally ill people that say absolute nonsense. So I told him, one of these days, I'm going to get you with someone who can really discuss this with you. So I have here in the studio the bad astronomer, not the bad astronomer,
sure.
Phil Plait, and he has dealt with the moon landing, and the word lunatic comes up very often because of its roots. So, Joe, are you there?
Yes.
Joe is here. Phil is here. Joe, you tell us how we did land on the moon, and Phil will explain it back to you, okay? I also want to say, before you get going, Joe, that almost every sort of debate they ever do, like Larry King or something, they have the guy whose side the host is on is always someone with a lot of experience, and the audience is on his side, and then the guy they call in who they disagree with is some, like, putz who can't talk or can't do anything. We have on here someone who does, like, ultimate fighting, someone who is in stand-up, is terrific. So in this case, the bad guy, I believe, has more skills at talking than the good guy. This is why it's going to be so great. Tell us, Joe.
Well, this is my take on it. I am not saying that I have any information that anybody else doesn't have. I'm not saying that I know that we didn't land on the moon. I'm not saying that I know that everyone's a liar. I'm not saying that it was a total hoax. All I'm saying is when I look at all of it, when I look at the photographic evidence, or I look at the fact that we haven't been back since 1972, when I look at the fact that no humans except the Apollo astronauts have ever gone through the Van Allen radiation belt, the fact that no one's even done a flyby around the moon since then, it seems weird to me. When I look at the press conference and I see Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong and Michael Collins nervous and weird and obviously, like, being deceptive after they came back, I go, what is that? I look at all that stuff. When I look at the video footage that Bart Siebel character, who's clearly out of his mind, for sure, and so is that Renee guy, so are a lot of those guys. But sometimes, occasionally, someone who's clearly out of their mind has a point. If you can sift through all their BS and look at all the crap that they say and run it through a filter, every now and then they'll say something, oh, well, this guy's wrong about almost everything, but is he wrong about that? Now, when I look at that video and some of the video that Siebel has of them faking the distance between the Earth and the moon when they're shooting the moon, or the Earth rather, through a circular window in the lunar module, and they have the windows blacked out, they're pretending that it's deep space, they're saying that they're 130,000 miles out, and then you see them pull the window curtains down, or the shade, whatever they have covering up with the windows, and you see that they're actually in near-Earth orbit. That makes me curious. When I look at the photographs and I see intersecting shadows. Now, I'm no photographic expert. I don't know anything about the moon, really, except stuff that I've read on the internet. I'm no scientist. But when I see intersecting shadows that seem to show some sort of a different light source or more than one light source, it looks odd to me. When I see that those camera, those crosshairs aren't over all the images, it looks cut and cropped to me. When I look at some of the photographs of the moon, I have this gigantic coffee book, coffee table book, and it's all, you know, a NASA book, and it's beautiful pictures of the moon and all these different photographs. Well, when I look at some of them, they look obviously fake. They look cut and cropped. And I'm not saying I know they are. I'm not saying I have any special information. But I'm an open-minded person, and when I look at it, I say, look, I know I sound like a retard. I know I sound like a crackpot. I'm no saying that, you know, the earth is hollow. There's dinosaurs inside of it. I'm sure. It's very similar to saying, I don't think people landed on the moon. But you know what? I don't think people landed on the moon.
Well, you just gave. There's the whole argument right there. With great power, great force, great humor, and also great humility. Okay, Phil, point by point.
Well,
and feel free to heckle him, Joe. Not that I have to tell you to.
Well, I think we're done. Now, I let Joe rant on for a while, so now it's my turn.
Okay.
All of the points you brought up there are the same ones that are brought up on all these websites. You see them all the time.
And for sure. I'm not original.
Yeah, and they're all wrong, every one of them. And it's a lot of them are a little bit tricky to describe, and some of them are pretty easy. Like this idea that no astronaut's been in the Van Allen belt. That's just wrong.
Okay, well, who's been in through the Van Allen belts and survived besides the Apollo astronauts?
Every single shuttle astronaut who has ever gone into space. The Van Allen belts are these regions of high radioactivity outside the Earth. It's caused by the Earth's magnetic field.
Right, but they start at 300 miles out, and don't all the shuttle trips go to 300 miles? That's it.
Nope, that's not right. There is a dip in the Van Allen belts over the South Atlantic. It's called the South Atlantic Anomaly. And the shuttle goes through this every seven or so orbits. Hubble goes through it every seven orbits. They have to shut it down. They have to shut some of the instruments down because of the increased radiation. And in fact, the Gemini missions, which were the warm-ups for the Apollo, went specifically into the Van Allen belts to make sure that the astronauts could survive the radiation. So even before Apollo, astronauts had gone in, and that was into the actual Van Allen belts to make sure it worked. You could say, the shuttle astronauts, they just go into the lower bit for a few seconds. Gemini went in it, they tested it, they showed that, in fact, the radiation did not go through the spaceship very well, and the astronauts would be fine.
Now, how high do the belts go at the lowest point?
I'm not sure exactly how high off the surface of the Earth the South Atlantic Anomaly is. I know it's a couple hundred miles because that's where Hubble is, 250, 270, something like that. You can look that up.
So it's basically the edge of the belt. Now, does the intensity vary between the edge of the belt and deeper into the belt? The belt lasts between, depending on who you ask. If you ask NASA, they say it's 24,000 miles. If you ask Robert Van Allen, the guy who discovered it, he says it's over 60,000 miles.
Well, it's actually James Van Allen, just to make a little point there, because that's really probably the only thing I'm going to score on you today. So what the hell?
For
a name.
A real guy?
I think he was an actor. He was in some sitcom. The belts are actually pretty complicated. There's an inner belt and an outer belt, and the inner belt has more radiation, the outer belt has less. And, you know, you hear these claims, the astronauts needed 8 feet of lead to prevent them from dying from the radiation. And that's wrong, too. There's different kinds of radiation, and the kind of radiation that is in the belt is actually stopped pretty well by the insulation in the spacecraft and the suits they were wearing. There's a kind of radiation that you can stop with a piece of paper. And so a lot of people just think, oh, radiation, we're going to die. But there's different kinds in the belt. They're different radiation in the belts, different belts. It's all very complicated.
All right, but has anyone ever gone through them?
All the way?
The Apollo astronauts?
Not all the way, but the Gemini missions went deep into the heart of them and stayed there to make sure that these guys would be in it. And the Apollo astronauts were moving very quickly because they were at the beginning of their trip when they still had all their velocity, and they only nicked sort of the inner part of the belt. They weren't in it for that long.
So if they went through 60,000-plus miles, how long would that take?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to calculate that. It would take a little while,
and
probably
it's not
hours.
Dangerous.
But they didn't go through, like, straight through the belt. It's not like they're driving through the heart of Kansas. They just sort of nicked the corner of it. So they were only in the belts for a few minutes. And their dosimeters...
Wait a minute. They were only in it for a few minutes, but I thought the belt circles the whole Earth.
They don't. They stop at the poles.
Yeah, so what they did is they actually launched...
So you can shoot through the poles and not touch the belt at all?
According to the drawing that I have in front of me, yes.
I think you would have to go through some of them, but there are regions where the belts are stronger and regions where they're weaker. And so it is, in fact, it's sort of a donut shape. So you can go to avoid the worst parts of it, and that's what the astronauts did. They got an elevated radiation dose, about what you and I get for living on a year on the surface. But the rest of it wasn't that bad. And so when they got back, hey, you know, it was elevated but not lethal.
Now, what about Operation Starfish Prime? I've read about this thing where they launched a nuclear weapon up into space in order to try to blast a hole through the belts. Is that BS? What is that?
No, that was actually, there were real tests done in the 1950s and 60s where they blew up hydrogen bombs in low Earth orbit or just up above the surface of the Earth because they thought this was a good idea.
That's the same government that put people on the moon.
Huh. It's true. This is the same government, you know, we have now, if you want to say that. But
sure.
But what happened was they blew these things up to see what would happen. And what happens is when you blow up a nuclear weapon, you get a very fast pulse of gamma rays. These are really high energy light waves. And these things slam into the atmosphere and they blast out electrons from the atoms in the atmosphere. And these things stream out really quickly and they generate a really strong magnetic field that lasts for a fraction of a second. And this is what, you know, you hear about this electromagnetic pulse. And it blew out electricity in a lot of places. This was over the Pacific, and actually in Hawaii, which was like hundreds of miles away, they were getting shorts, they lost power, all this kind of stuff. And the claim is that Starfish Prime, this one blast, I don't remember the date, but it was in the early 60s, fed so much radiation into the Van Allen belts that it was elevated for years. And what happened was, yes, it did have a localized effect. There was more radiation for a while, but after a while it did settle down. And I think the problem that people bring up about this is that a solar flare would do the same sort of thing, or maybe just all the nuclear testing raised the radiation level. But in fact, it just wasn't a problem. If you look at the actual levels of the radiation in there and the path the astronauts took, wasn't that bad.
Do they consistently monitor the levels of radiation? I mean, how do they know, like, how much damage this nuclear weapon launching into space did and how much the radiation maintains or how much stays out there?
To my knowledge, and I'm not an expert in Starfish Prime, not being a nuclear technician, they did launch probes that went into the Van Allen belts. The reason they're called the Van Allen belts is because James Van Allen built this instrument that went on the first U.S. satellite that actually detected these high levels of radiation, and that's how they discovered these things, and that's how they continue to monitor the belts. Now, of course, we have satellites up there all the time. They're radiation-hardened, and they actually do measure it.
There's satellites inside the belt?
They go in and out of the belts, and there are all sorts of devices on them to measure what the local radiation levels are. It's a good thing to monitor because in the case of a solar flare, that can dump a lot of high-energy electrons and protons into the magnetic field. Now, listen, I'm talking a little scientific here. I'm hoping everybody's bearing with me. And if you're listening in your car, you may want to pull over and take notes. And so it sort of feeds the belts, and they do get stronger for a while, and that's when you get a lot of northern light activity, aurora borealis, in the northern hemisphere. So actually it's kind of cool. You get a solar flare, you get a pretty light show, and you think, geez, if there are any astronauts up there right now, they could be in a little bit of trouble.
Now, what happens there? Now, what about solar flares that occurred supposedly, there was like a lot of solar activity and solar flares that occurred while these Apollo missions were going on.
Yeah.
What protected those guys?
Yeah, this was kind of the suck factor in being an Apollo astronaut, is that when they launched these things, it was actually at the peak of the solar cycle. The sun has this 11-year cycle where it has a lot of activity, sunspots and solar flares and stuff like that. Right now, we're at a minimum, but back then, they were actually approaching a maximum. And honestly, it was just luck that there was not a massive solar flare during the Apollo missions. There was one in between two of them that was huge. And if they had been out in space, actually outside of the Van Allen belts, Van Allen belts protect the Earth from
right.
this stuff. They catch it like a net, and they feed it down into our atmosphere where it becomes harmless. Out in space, you get hit by a solar flare like this, you're dead. And these guys could have been on the surface of the moon during a flare like that, and they would have died 250,000 miles away from home of radiation sickness, which is a horrifying way to go. So these guys are true heroes in every sense of the word. They knew what they were getting into.
So
and it was
basically
simple
a
luck.
Solar game of Russian roulette.
That's right. It was just probability. I guess luck is probability taken personally. I believe the large man on my right said that initially. But it was just probability that they didn't that didn't happen.
But I thought that there were some big solar flares that supposedly occurred during the Apollo mission.
There was one. You realize, of course, you know, the missions were spread out over 3 years. They went from 69
right.
to 72,
uh-huh.
and they only lasted about, you know, the first one, the Apollo 11 mission was like, what, 3 days there. They were on the moon for a few hours. They turned around and got out of there. So that was only 1 week. The later missions lasted longer. They were about 2 weeks. And the flare that I remember reading about happened in 72. I think it was between Apollo 16 and 17. And it was just simple luck. But there weren't any massive flares during the actual missions. There's one of these moon hoax guys, Ralph Renee. I believe Penn has
yeah,
some experience with him.
One.
Yeah, he was on Penn's show.
The show, right.
And I believe he was treated relatively fairly, actually, on the show.
Oh, well,
you guys
you know,
were really nice to him.
For sure.
I've actually been head-to-head with him, and that was quite the experience.
What about Bart Zebril? He
yeah.
seems much more lucid.
You'd think, wouldn't you? Yeah,
yeah.
You'd be kind of wrong.
Except for the whole crazy baby Jesus stuff. you get a, I had dinner with that guy once, and it was fascinating.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. It was fascinating.
Wow, I'd love to have been sitting on that.
Yeah, I would have loved to have you there.
Yeah, I've gone head-to-head with him. Actually, Michael Shermer and I took him on a few months ago on a radio show, and that was a riot.
Oh, is there a recording of it available anywhere?
I think so. It's out there someplace. You should hear it. It's pretty funny.
I would love to hear it.
Michael was the good cop, and I was like the gadfly, like, no, you got this all wrong. Sobrel says a lot of stuff. But it really all turns out to be wrong. He's got this top 10 list of reasons we couldn't have done it, and it's all garbage.
Yeah.
The Russians were so far ahead of us. And it's like, well, yeah, they were up until we started kicking their butts. They were going for headlines. You know, first rendezvous in space, first woman in space. It's like, how does the first woman in space help you get to the moon? You know, we stuck this woman on a spaceship and put her in space. Great. That's a real engineering challenge, you know? And so he makes these lists and stuff, and it doesn't make any sense. And he's making a lot of these same arguments, and most of them are pretty easy to show wrong.
Now, let's go through a few of the more things that Joe said. Go through
a little
bit more of the list.
Spend way too much time on radiation.
I want people to know that we're talking to Joe Rogan, and if you can't picture him, he was the host of Fear Factor. He's the one the government hates for making people eat bugs and destroying our
government. The government hates me for that?
Absolutely.
Damn.
The FCC just put out a thing and said our culture is being ruined by shows where people eat bugs. Who the hell else are they talking about, Joe?
I like Fear Factor.
Put that out? The culture is being ruined by that?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. There was just a thing of the a senator is trying to help television culturally and do equal time stuff, and that quote was done by the FCC. There are shows where they make people eat bugs.
That's like a syphilis and AIDS-ridden prostitute blaming her ill health on a hangnail.
Absolutely. But there's no doubt about that. But you weren't mentioned by name, but I don't know. Is 60 Minutes making people eat bugs?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't really watch 60 Minutes.
I gotta say,
watching
those people eat those cave spiders was one of the toughest things I have ever sat through. That was pretty hard.
That's easy stuff. The horrible stuff is the stuff that smells.
And that would be everything else.
They're just little crabs or little crustaceans, you know?
So
let's go back to the thing.
Okay. Are you done with? Let's move on to radiation.
I'm radiated out. What do you got?
So that's where we are. There's no danger in the radiation. They go through the hole in the top of the donut. They're only in it for a few minutes. There's no worries whatsoever. And the only reason why other people haven't done it yet is...
Well, I wouldn't say there's no worries whatsoever. Radiation is still an issue. It's an issue on Mars missions because it's a long mission. The reason we haven't gone back isn't technical or scientific, it's political. By the end of the Apollo missions, the people weren't that interested, and NASA was already starting to gear up towards the space shuttle, which is what the government wanted, and a space station, and Apollo just started, you know, dying off. And
everyone has been promising a return to the moon, from George Sr. to George Jr. I don't think Clinton ever promised it, but let me read to you an interesting quote that Clinton said. This is from his book. This is page 156 of his book, My Life. And this is, he says, just a month before, he's talking about a conversation that he had with someone a month after the Apollo 11 landing. He says, just a month before, Apollo 11 astronauts Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong left their colleague Michael Collins aboard Spaceship Columbia and walked on the moon, beating by 5 months President Kennedy's goal of putting a man on the moon before the decade was out. The old carpenter asked me if I really believed it happened. I said, sure, I saw it on television. He disagreed. He said he didn't believe it for a minute that them television fellers could make things look real that weren't. Back then, I thought he was a crank. During my 8 years in Washington, I saw some things on TV that made me wonder if he wasn't ahead of his time.
You mean Clinton might have said something that turned out not to be right?
Well, not just not to be
right. Oh, you should publish this.
I understand what you're saying, but isn't that an odd thing to say for a guy who was the president, a two-term president of the United States of America? That's a weird thing to say. To even imply, even hint, that possibly we didn't go to the moon.
Well, listen, Joe, We are going to take a commercial break, and we are going to keep you on board, and we're going to come back with Joe Rogan, the host of Fear Factor, against Phil Plait, the astronomer.
Hey, man, this is no battle. I'm no knowledgeable person. I am very honored to have this conversation.
You're doing a great job, Joe.
And I love Fear Factor, so there you go.
This is fabulous. We'll be back. This is Michael Goudeau, who's saying nothing, Penn Jillette, who's saying next to nothing, on CBS Radio, Free FM. We'll be right back. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette, who has not been to the moon and never will go. Michael Goudeau has gotten a word in edgewise. And we have Joe Rogan, the manly host of Fear Factor. And he's got some questions he's asking Phil Plait, Bad Astronomy website. Let's give Phil's, what's your web address?
Yeah, let's do that. It's badastronomy.com.
That's easy.
Yeah.
And he's answering some of Joe's questions about the Apollo missions and going to the moon, and he had just given you a Clinton quote, and you'd given a snotty answer that Clinton maybe lied.
These damn scientists always giving their snotty answers.
Snotty answers. Now, address that. Does that quote seem to make it seem like a man who was in office for 8 years and at least paying attention some of the time had some doubts about that?
You know, just because you're president doesn't make you immune to ideas that may not be true. Mm-hmm. I believe our current president is a creationist, mm-hmm. And he may have some other wacky ideas. So the Apollo moon hoax idea has been in the popular culture.
Though, there's a massive difference between intelligence levels of our current and former president.
Oh, yeah. They're like inverse. I'll give you that.
But the other thing is that quote... Joe, even in the not, I don't think you took it out of context at all. That quote, the way it read when you read it, seemed to imply that he was kind of saying it perhaps with a wink. They do some amazing things on TV, talking about some other stuff you may have seen, and that does seem to have a little bit of wit to it and may not be saying clearly he doesn't believe we land on the moon. Or am I misinterpreting?
It's open to interpretation, but what concerned me is what he said was, during my 8 years in Washington, I saw some things on TV that made me wonder, meaning that he was privy to information like, I mean, we've all seen some weird deception labeled as propaganda. Like, what was that girl's name? Jessica something or other. They were trying to label as a hero during this.
Oh, yeah.
Jessica Lynch?
Yes. Yeah. Remember that? When they were saying, you know, they had to go in and rescue her. And she's like, what are you talking about? I was in a hospital. What are you talking about?
But there wasn't really faked footage of that, was there?
No, there was no fake footage. But, I mean, how do we know that there's not fake footage? CNN.
You know, you're... If your point is that the government lies to us, and that's where this whole thing starts, so this is what makes me crazy about these things, is it is absolutely the government's fault. Joe's point is very well taken. If they're going to lie to us about this, 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 and this, why aren't they lying about that?
Well, anyone who's read the Warren Commission report has got to have some questions about how the government handles things.
Well, up until this current administration, I would have said, well, if the government's going to lie to us, they're going to do a much better job than they did with the moon hoax conspiracy. I got to throw that one out the window now. But look, and, you know, maybe Clinton was looking at his own footage of trying to find what is, but you know, look, I'll grant, maybe he's talking about the moon hoax. Maybe he's saying, maybe we did do that or not. Smart people can believe things that are dumb. We see this all the time. Even, you know, the smartest people in the world, they're Nobel laureates who go out and promote stuff like homeopathy and all kinds of garbage. And so, you know, I'm not saying you have to be dumb to believe in the moon hoax. Not at all. I know a lot of smart people who have questions about it. Like, you know, the parallel shadows and stuff like
that.
I'll admit, I'm not going to say I'm necessarily a smart guy, but some of the stuff had me baffled. Now, you mentioned intersecting shadows.
Yes.
Now, on the Fox Moon Hoax show, which came out in 2001, they specifically used the phrase shadows intersect. They were actually using footage of Bart Sobrell, probably the leading moon hoax promulgator these days, and he said the shadows intersect. Now, I will tell you right now, if you can show me a picture where two shadows on the moon are physically intersecting, then I will, I don't know. I don't know what I'll do.
You'll
have shown me up. Yes,
they never actually touch,
I'll kiss
they are...
Penn on the mouth. Yeah.
No.
No,
You might want to do that anyway. I don't know what your motives are.
Joe's done that anyway.
Yeah, okay.
He's just ahead of you.
But that's the word that Sobrel used. And in fact, shadows don't intersect. The shadows can't intersect physically,
but they are going in intersecting directions.
Yes. The shadows appear to converge. They appear to be looking like they're pointing in two different directions. You can think of it that way. They appear to be from two different light sources. Yeah, that's what it looks like. However, if there were two different light sources, you'd see two different shadows coming off of every object. So you can be pretty sure that's not what's going on. A better argument might be that if there were a light on the set, a nearby light, the shadows might appear to point in two different directions because of the angles. But in fact, shadows are non-parallel here on the Earth all the time, and you never see it. The reason they look non-parallel is simply perspective. It's the same thing that if you're standing in a set of railroad tracks, the railroad tracks appear to converge on the horizon, but you know the railroad tracks are parallel. They gotta be, or else the railroad can't run on them. It's the same thing. You have two objects sitting on the lunar surface. Typically, one is nearby and one is far away, and that provides you a sense of perspective. Both shadows are, in fact, parallel, but because of perspective, they look like they're pointing in two different directions. You can actually find this on the web. If you look up, moon hoax parallel shadows in Google, you will find these. I've taken pictures myself. I talk about this. I give a talk about the moon hoax. I show pictures of lampposts in a park across the street from my house where the shadows are not even close to being parallel. Some of them are pointing right and some of them are pointing left, but they all appear to converge on the horizon, what's called the vanishing point, right? This thing you learn about in art class.
Right.
And so that's what's going on here. And it actually, you can be really fooled by this. And I will say that when I first heard this argument, I went, those shadows aren't parallel. And it took me a few minutes to go, I get it. And then it made sense to me. But you see it all the time. You never notice it. Go outside. If it's a sunny day, pick two trees and you'll see that the shadows, it's amazing. Everybody I talked about this, they go out and they go, wow, I never noticed that before. It's amazing what's in front of your face your whole life that you just don't notice.
Well, I'll have to check that out. I've never really looked into it other than looking at the pictures on the internet and going, huh.
Sure, we can leave this one open, but...
Now, what about all those hot spots? It looks like there's a light source behind people.
I was hoping you wouldn't bring this up. not because it's a good point, but because it's really hard to explain without images. But basically, the argument goes, if you look at the Apollo astronauts, some of them look like they're standing in a spotlight. Like there's somebody literally standing there with a spotlight beaming a circle of light on these guys. And this is actually a fairly complicated physical effect. It's got a German name. It's called Heiligenschein. And basically, it is how to explain this on the radio, right? Part of it has to do with the fact that when you're looking straight down the beam of light, when you're looking there are no shadows on the ground there. If you look off to the side, you see an object's shadow stretching behind it. But if you have a light shining on your head and you turn around and look at the shadow of your head, the light looks very bright there. It's a spotlight effect. I have pictures of this, actually, that I've taken in the infield of a baseball diamond. The dust has this peculiar property that it sort of throws light back in the direction it comes. So if you look at your own shadow, you're sort of seeing the sunlight reflecting off of the ground there stronger than around you. See, again, and people are in their cars thinking, the scientist guy is nuts. He's not making any sense. But this is what's going on. And in fact, if you get up early in the morning and there's dew on the grass and the sun is shining, you can actually see what looks like a soft glow around your head as you're walking down the street, and it looks like a halo around your head. It's really cool.
Time you're up early in the morning, Joe.
Yeah, that's probably a bad point. I'm sorry.
Well, I go to bed sometimes early in the morning.
No, there you go. Yeah, there you go. So next time you're like slouching home, give that one a shot.
Try to do in Vegas.
Man. But it works in dust really well. And it's really cool because I've got pictures of myself like that where I took a camera, turned around from the sun on this baseball infield, and there is a strong glow around my head. I love showing this when I give talks. But that's what the spotlight effect is.
So it's just dust and the sun and the shadow.
Yeah.
It's a visual anomaly.
It's like an optical illusion, like a halo around the sun or something like that. It really is just that. It's really cool.
All right. Now, recently, the Apollo 15 landing site has been spotted. They believe that you've seen that.
Yeah, that was cool. It wasn't. People say this isn't proof we landed on the moon. It's like, well, no, it isn't. But basically, when the Apollo missions landed, they disturbed the dust around them. And there's this mission called Clementine. It was a military mission that orbited the moon and took a lot of pictures. And I think, I'm pretty sure it was a Clementine picture, that shows like a little spot on the moon, but it's right where Apollo 15 was. Now, those of us who know we landed on the moon looked at that and went, oh, cool. And those of us who maybe have their suspicions are like, look, it's a smudge on the moon.
Yeah, but I'll go either way on that. Here's my question about that.
Sure.
If there's this big smudge they can see from Clementine, how come when you look at any photos of the lunar module, the lander, there's no blast crater whatsoever? And that was like a big point with a lot of the hoax theorists too. The hoax theorists were saying that all the initial images of that NASA had drawn before the Apollo launches all show that there was going to be a big blast crater. There's that famous drawing that what is his name? The guy that does all those old
Chesley,
you know,
Bonestell.
No, I'm sorry. He's a guy that has those old friendly paintings that you always see of, like, a guy giving a kid an apple and everyone's smiling.
Norman Rockwell.
Yeah, Norman Rockwell actually has a painting of an Apollo astronaut climbing out of one of the lunar modules, and he's standing in this gigantic blast crater. But if you look at any of the photographs of the lunar module, there's no blast crater whatsoever. So which one is it? Is there a blast crater from the lunar module, or is there no blast crater? And if there's no blast crater, then how can this Apollo 11 photograph from Clementine show a blast crater when you look at the clear, very clear photographs, the close-ups of the lunar module shows no blast crater whatsoever?
Well, I'm going to have to call Norman Rockwell's alma mater and make sure they take away his aeronautical engineering degree. That's
Norman
a good
Rockwell,
point.
All the old photographs from NASA, all the old drawings from NASA.
Before they'd gone to the moon, they weren't sure exactly what it was going to be like. And if you look at Chesley Bonestell's the artist I mentioned, he's the one who really, with Wernher von Braun, popularized this idea of going back to the moon. His paintings are totally cool. But when you look at the landscapes that he drew versus the landscapes that are there, they're different. We had this idea of what the moon was going to look like that didn't turn out to be right. And so, you know, in some of these paintings, they show this huge flame coming out of the bottom of the lunar lander as well.
Right.
But that's not true. There is no big, giant flame like that. They used a fuel which didn't make a big flame. You couldn't see it. So the drawings weren't that accurate. Now, when they landed, there was not a blast crater, and this is a big theory, the conspiracy theories. They say there was 10,000 pounds of thrust coming out of the bottom of this thing, and it should have, 5 tons should have blown out this huge hole. Well, yeah, it was 10,000 pounds of thrust at maximum thrust, but in fact, as they were landing, they throttled down. I mean, you don't blast out of your garage at 80 miles
right.
an hour,
no,
you know.
No blast crater is the point, but yet this photograph from Clementine supposedly is a blast crater.
Right. Well, I should say yes. That was part of the point you were making. So the thrust wasn't as big, and it was spread out over a big area, so it didn't make a blast crater. What the Apollo 15 landing site image from Clementine is showing is not a blast crater. It's where the dust is disturbed. Clementine was a mission to map out. It had a lot of. It was actually what they call a technology tester. They used a lot of off the shelf stuff to make cheap detectors, and they were doing a lot of stuff with it. But one of the things it did it was mapping out the minerals on the surface of the moon, which is something you need to know if there's going to be something you need when you're going to go back, like a supply of oxygen or titanium or whatever. So they did this mineralogical map. I'm a scientist, not a linguist, and I have a hard time with some big words. But it did that, and so what it's actually mapping is a disturbance in the surface, not really a crater. So you can imagine you could go out to let's use the baseball diamond analogy again. You go to the infield, you can run your hand over the dust and make a disturbance in the dust without making a crater. That's what was seen. It's just where the dust was pushed away.
I'm looking at the photograph. I've seen the photo, but it's a very, very big disturbance. Now, when you look at the sites, though, and you look at under the lunar module, you see nothing. You see no disturbance whatsoever. So which one is it? Is it a big disturbance or is it no disturbance?
Hold on a second, Joe. We're going to take another break. We're going to come back and get that answer. You sure have questions, Joe. Now, you got to say, Joe knows his stuff.
Yes, he does.
You know, and how many papers you got in front of you, Joe? You doing this off the top of your head?
I'm doing most of it off the top of my head.
I'm impressed.
I have a couple of photographs that I saved.
This is great, Joe. Thanks so much. We're going to be back with Joe Rogan, host of Fear Factor, and who has some questions about whether we landed on the moon, and Phil Plait, the bad astronomer. And this is Michael Goudeau, who's trying to keep up on the computer, and Penn Jillette on Free FM, CBS Radio. Yeah, this is Pat Gillette, Free FM, CBS Radio. His name is Michael Goudeau. Let's get right back into it. We have Joe Rogan, the host of Fear Factor, and someone who's done an incredible amount of research about the moon landing and whether it happened or not. And we have Phil Plait, the bad astronomer from badastronomy.com. And the question he just asked was, if you're going to try to see it with the Clementine, there's a heck of a lot of dust. And it sure didn't seem that in the pictures that...
There's a large dark spot in the Clementine photographs that they're using to represent the area where Apollo 15 supposedly landed.
Yeah, now that dark spot, as I recall, and I don't have it in front of me, but I think that dark spot is a false color. It might even be a negative because
it's a photograph. I mean, it's pretty clear. I don't think it's a negative.
I don't think Clementine actually had an optical imager. I might be wrong on that. I don't know if it had a camera like that, but it was sensitive to different types of minerals. And so it looks like a photograph, but I'm not sure that it's a photograph in that if you were flying over the moon right there, you would see a dark spot where it saw a dark spot. You would see a disturbance in the surface. And what they did is when they landed, the rocket exhaust from the lander was pushing the dust around. So directly underneath the lander, the dust was blown outwards sort of in a radial pattern, just out in 360 degrees in every direction. And it went a long way. It was carried out by the force of the thrust. And so over a large area, there was a disturbance in the dust, but it was really only cleared out directly below the lander because there's no air on the moon. And if you take a blow dryer and blow it into like a pile of baking powder or something like that, you get all the curly cues and it makes a huge disturbance and all that. But without that air to carry the dust on the moon, it really only just blew straight out and left sort of a hole under the lander directly underneath it.
Right, so, but this brings us back to the initial point. There was no hole under the lander.
I mean, a hole in the
lander,
dust.
There's absolutely nothing. There's no disturbance whatsoever.
I mean,
there's no dust on the pads. It's flat and smooth. It looks like it's completely undisturbed.
That's right. It is disturbed because there was dust there that got blown out. There's no crater.
But this is 1994 that Clementine circled, correct?
Something like that. Yeah, it was
1994.
You know.
So we're talking about 20 plus years?
Are you expecting
20 plus years and that's what's left?
The wind is going to blow the dust back? No, you mean that's what's left of what?
20-plus years later, there's this gigantic disturbance in this area that gets pelted by micrometeorites every day of the week.
Oh. The surface of the moon is actually billions of years old. There's the dust and everything there. But there's not – I mean, micrometeorites doesn't really – they don't change the surface that quickly.
What about meteorites themselves? I mean, don't we get hundreds of meteorites a day? I mean, how can they possibly see a spot that's 20 years old from something that, if you look at the photographs, made zero – no blast crater at all. It made no disturbance whatsoever. Yet 20-plus years later, they can find this spot?
Well,
find this spot? It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, we know where they landed. I mean,
we know where they landed, but we have very clear photographic evidence of the lunar module sitting on the surface of the moon with no disturbance. Yet you can see this somehow or another, this invisible disturbance from space 20 years later? That seems a little weird.
No. I'm not saying that there's no disturbance on the surface. I'm saying there's no blast crater. The dust was removed from that spot.
Yeah, so
what
like
am I missing?
Happened.
Okay, what he keeps asking over and over
again.
Okay,
what I'm not hearing. Let's
why.
All get into this. Yeah. Come on.
I don't know why. Maybe restating it will help because I think he said it okay. He is saying that there is not a discernible blast crater. You've explained why there isn't. And then he's saying, but then you turn around and say, on the Clementine images, we see a disturbance. How come we can't see the disturbance at the time it happened, and yet we can see it 20-plus years later?
A large disturbance
good?
20-plus years later.
Okay. No, it seems to me that the moon is basically a rock covered by 2 feet of chocolate powder. And if you blow off the powder, you get down to rock. And there's not a blast crater in the rock, but you have blown away all of the chocolate powder.
Michael is precisely right, and he has concisely said what was – I was really stumbling over.
Yes,
that's my moon. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm here to release some breaking NASA news.
I mean, you see this image. It looks like a crater.
It's not. It's just where the dust got blown around and mixed up.
but it doesn't look like there's any dust blown around or anything happens whatsoever to the very clear, high-resolution photographs of the underneath the lunar module.
Now, why can't we see the dust disturbance at the time, but only 20
years? We don't see nothing.
You see nothing.
It looks exactly the same.
No. If you actually look at a lot of the pictures, well, of course, you can't take a picture of the landing spot before they landed. We don't have that technology, so we only have pictures after the lunar lander was there. And when you look under the landers, you can see sort of these black radial streaks from the surface being scorched a little bit
I don't see that anywhere.
That's in one of the pictures, I believe. I've seen it.
Every single one of them. I've never seen anything remotely close to that.
I might be wrong, but I do know that the dust was blown out from underneath these things. And without air, our sort of common sense ideas of how things behave on the moon get a little confused. And so you don't get dust billowing up in the air and then settling down in the pads, for example. It just blows straight out. By the time the lander actually touched down, the exhaust had been blowing out the dust for several seconds.
Okay, but if that's true, then how come it didn't work that way with the lunar rovers? The lunar rovers, the dust kicked up in the air and came down the same way it would if it was on Earth. The only difference being that it came down slower, presumably because of the 1/6 Earth gravity.
Actually, this is... Wow, we were confused before. This is going to be great. The rovers were actually, you know, they would drive off away from the lander, so there was still dust relatively undisturbed on the surface. And when the wheels would kick up the dust, what's really interesting is that if you think about it, if you were to drive through a big pile of dust on the Earth with your car, what would you see? Well, the big particles, the pebbles and stuff, would go up and come down, and that would be it. But the finer stuff would billow up, and you get these big dust clouds.
Right.
You see that in movies all the time where somebody peels out, right, and there's this huge dust cloud. You don't see that with the rovers. You see, all the dust goes up and it goes down, a beautiful parabolic arc.
The same way it would if it was dirt on Earth.
But it would have to be like gravel on the Earth, because the stuff on the surface of the moon is, I mean, I've actually heard it described as like cocoa powder. It has that sort of very fine powdery texture, talcum or actually gunpowder, and it's the particles themselves are like grains of sand, but they're extremely small.
But it doesn't look like cocoa powder. It looks like dirt. It looks like dirt that's played at half speed. That's what it looks like.
Well, it's kind of hard to tell from the distance.
Have you seen video of the lunar module, the rover sped up when they're driving? It looks like it's driving on dirt. The dirt kicks up and it falls down, just like it would if you were going four-wheeling in Kentucky.
Well, in fact, if you speed up the video on the Apollo astronauts, to me it does not look real. It looks like they're moving at the correct speed, things falling at the correct speed, but if you look at their arms and their legs, it looks like they're you know, moving really quickly.
No, it doesn't. I've seen the video of them doing it at double speed. When they talk about them walking on the surface of the moon, that the 1/6 gravity made them move slower, but what it really was, like the hoax people think that it's half speed, that if you speed it up double, it looks like they're moving around normal speed. They don't. Their arms don't look like they're moving fast at all. It looks like they're moving like a guy in a spacesuit in Earth gravity, just kind of hopping around on the surface of dirt. It looks like the same exact gravity.
Well, I'm just going to have to agree to disagree with you here, because I've seen that video, and if you speed up
I've seen that video hundreds of times obsessively.
So have I, in fact, because I've been debunking guys like you, so I have to do this.
They don't look like their arms are moving fast at all.
Oh, I think it is. When you speed it up two times, I think, you know, you see them walking around and doing stuff. It looks kind of like cartoons, like old 1930s
thing. I completely disagree.
Okay, well, the audience will have to make up their own minds,
I
think.
Do a search and take a look at that.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, they're not even leaving the surface of the moon more than like a few inches.
Yeah. They were wearing these big, heavy spacesuits in the backpack.
Right, okay, which brings us to the future, which brings us to future landings where they filmed more elaborate, you know, high-color videos of them on the moon, where all of a sudden they can jump like 16, 20 feet. They can jump in great distances. Now, what's that about?
I will
There's
give you...
That looks where it looks like they're doing flying, crouching tiger, hidden dragon crap.
I will give you $1 million right now if you can show me video of an astronaut jumping 20 feet on the moon.
Not in the air. I'm not talking about in the air. They're jumping distances. And it might not be 20 feet.
A million bucks right now. For anybody who shows me video from Apollo, 20 feet.
You haven't seen video of them making great jumps?
No. They've jumped.
The
best they would do is skip around. They tried doing some jumps and they kept falling down. And the problem is the spacesuit has this big backpack on it, which makes them really off balance. And they kept falling trying to do normal stuff. It was really hard for them to do stuff.
Well, that's another point, because I've seen some video where they fall down and they catch themselves with their legs up in the air, where it looks like they're being suspended on wires.
Well, yeah, they're in lower gravity and so they bounce funny.
But why would they, even if they bounce funny, why would it look like they're suspended on wires, like they're being suspended from a point on their back where their legs kick up and then automatically come back down. I've seen video of them, like, righting themselves where they're literally, you know, their whole body is pitched 45 degrees forward and they manage to right themselves. It looks like they're on wires.
Joe, this has been astonishing. We've done the whole hour.
No! We haven't even started.
I can't even rebut you. I mean, come on.
You have held your own, man.
We haven't even got to the juicy stuff yet.
Email me.
Give me a call.
I'll give you my number. Call me.
All right, please do.
That's Joe Rogan. We are back with Ben Jelak. Goodbye.
Check Penn Jillette weekdays on Free FM.